This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. For years, San Antonio and Bexar County emergency management leaders have been preparing for the Sunday mass shooting in Sutherland Springs. They didn't know when or where or how bad it would be, but they knew someday, somewhere, and that it would be very bad. It's not easy to fight for budget items and training time and personnel to deal with the unimaginable. But on Sunday, when the gunfire started, the calls to 911 came in and then the police radio sounded, shots fired, all units respond. It became all too real. 26 lives were lost and we grieve. But for law enforcement, they have to start over right away. Get ready for the next emergency because it's coming. We don't know when, we don't know where, but it's coming. We're talking about our mass shooting emergency preparedness and response. And we ask you to call in with your questions and comments about the shooting in Sutherland Springs. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org. Tweet us at @tprsource. We're joined by Harry Jimenez. He is the deputy chief with the Bexar County Sheriff's Office, the lead trainer for the Civilian Response to Active Shooter Events course. Also, Ryan Searles, training and emergency specialist at Haven for Hope and an independent trainer for active shooting situations. Mark Chadwick is with us on the line. He's an emergency management specialist for the Bexar County Office of Emergency Management. And again, the number to call in is 210-614-8980. Harry Jimenez over at the Bexar County Sheriff's Office, thank you for being here. Can you talk about how events unfolded on Sunday morning?
Good morning. Thank you so much for the opportunity to have us in your program. So very unfortunate and tragic event. A deranged individual decided to attack a place of worship, a church. This was very fast, unannounced. Many people lost their lives. Many people still injured and recovering. And it's not only what happened on Sunday, but also what we see that we have to continue working towards after these events happen. Not only that, although very unfortunate, fire, EMS, dispatch, and law enforcement will look into this event very detailed and learn, and we'll see what things to that can be repeated, see what things we can improve, and then continue working with the community, with the family assistance, community assistance centers, because this is going to be long-term. We have a lot of our citizens that are family, neighbors, coworkers, schoolmates, et cetera, and everybody was impacted by this.
Mark Chadwick, Emergency Management Specialist for Bexar County Office of Emergency Management. When the event happened in Sutherland Springs, that's in Wilson County, we had Bexar County response. Also part of the scene was in Guadalupe County where the assailant, that's where he fled and that's where he crashed and died. So we had a multi-county response. That's what you train for, don't you?
Yes, Dave, and thank you for allowing us to be here. That's something that we do train with, and we're always involved with our regional partners across the ACOG region and even outside of that region in trying to be more prepared for whatever we might face.
Ryan Searles, you train for active shooter situations. The shooter in Sutherland Springs, Kelly, is he acting inside or outside of the norm on how active shooters normally behave?
Again, thanks for having me. There's been a wide variety of active shooter emergencies that have happened around the country, both from external structures and both inside of buildings. You don't see a lot of times where they start engaging from outside of the building and then go inside and shoot. So that one is kind of unique in itself.
And so we know that he was a Ryan active on social media. He had sent a lot of threats. He was had a long grievance with one individual who went to that church. And so and that led him to that church, to those individuals. And you have to wonder how churches need to respond to this in general, and what would you tell them?
I've done work with some churches in the past. What you can really do is just try to reinforce your physical security barriers as much as possible. You know, by putting just things in place to stop people from entering. Can you always predict when it's going to happen or how it's going to happen? No. And you can just try to do as much as possible to limit people from getting in maybe after services start by you have a certain lockdown procedure to, you know, just reinforcing and putting in certain locks and training people. I've done work with a few of the churches here in town with training in response. So there's always training you can reach out to and grab.
I hear that some high-profile churches here in San Antonio have undercover officers inside the congregation, basically ready for a response. Is that true?
I'm not going to comment on that one.
Okay. Harry Jimenez, over at the Bexar County Sheriff's Office, when did we all start responding? What units did y'all start sending out there? How did y'all begin to coordinate?
So, two things. We have a, since Sheriff Salazar came on administration, one of the main things that he asked for his command staff is to be active in the community. And we are physically being there, but also by social media. Today's date is a one of electronic media. Social media is instant notification. And there were immediate posts, almost simultaneously with the 9/11 call. We responded as our communications got notified. Command staff notification came out. And within minutes, we had not only Sheriff Salazar, but command staff. And we sent patrol units, not only to respond, because one thing that I would like to make a comment is, their first responders, they did such an amazing job. They saved so many lives. They were right on time, very fast. And what we did is throughout this process, we deploy support staff. There's a lot of things that come into place, controlling the access to the scene because you're saving lives. And while shots are being fired, you are trying to, that's your driving force. You're trying to stop the bad guy. You're trying to stop the killing. But once that passes, you move into stopping the dying, rescue victims, put hands on patients. But outside that, you have the control of the scene, individuals coming in. You have to move patients away from the community because this is a smaller community, and we knew this was going to be a very large response. We have a command post that we brought in to be able to work with our partners at Texas Rangers and the FBI, which deployed within minutes of the incident, too.
Okay, we're going to take a break. We'll come back. We'll get to some phone calls. The number is 210-614-8980. We're talking about the emergency response, the preparedness, the lessons learned from dealing with the mass shooting in Sutherland Springs. What questions or comments do you have? What concerns do you have? Do you think our churches need to become fortresses in order to prevent this from happening again? The number 210-614-8980. The source continues after this break. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Emergency preparedness, we've talked about that all the time, but when it comes to things like mass shootings, it's almost inconceivable, but they're happening. It happened not that long ago, 40 days ago in Las Vegas, and now less than a week ago in nearby Sutherland Springs. How do we prepare for the next one? How do we make sure that lives the loss of life is limited as much as we can. The number to call in is 210-614-8980. Chip has called in. And Chip, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. From the moment that I got information that this was happening, I had to assume that this was, because of that location, deeply personal. This was not an act of, you know, international terrorism. This was targeted at a family and a community. And I don't think there's any really way to really prepare for that, except maybe, and this is kind of a plug, improve local EMS facilities. Thank you.
Chip, thank you for calling in. Improving local EMS facilities. EMS, the fire department from San Antonio, also responded to this in a big way. So, Mark Chadwick, can you talk about, with the Office of Emergency Management responding, can you talk about that?
Certainly. So we deploy a number of our assets immediately in response to a request from Wilson County. We have our Mobile Emergency Operations Center, which is on scene and still on scene out there right at this moment. What we have is also another asset. It's called our Mobile Incident Support Trailer. We have that. We have our communications trailer, which has been moved today to the Floresville area to assist with aiding the communications since they're going to be having the large service there. We've also provided them with generators and light units and as much as we can, all of our personnel that are there to be able to assist. I wrote their incident action plan for them on Sunday for the beginning of it to assist DPS and the FBI. So there's a lot of things that are going on, either manpower-wise or supplying the types of equipment that, you know, unfortunately, are a lot of our neighboring counties really can't afford to have. But in our partnership with them, we do that for them.
In training for these type of events, Mark Chadwick, I mean, I've noticed as a journalist over the years that they do seem to come one right after the other very rapidly. And like I remember like after the shooting of Selena in Corpus Christi, the very next day, there was a mass workplace shooting, you know, and it was just a very bizarre thing that you had these two big stories happen right there, right next to each other at the same time. So do you have to train your officers or y'all have the mindset that this happened, but we have to stay on high alert because there's a high probability that there's going to be a follow-up emergency that we have to be able to respond to?
Well, you're exactly right there, Dave. We even train all of our personnel that even while you're responding, you could have a secondary incident happening during the middle of that response. So we always want to be on our guard. We always want to be on our best game. You know, and it's difficult to prepare for these things. You know, we try and do the best we can, but there's so many unknowns in these types of circumstances. That's why training is a constant. We don't ever think we've reached the plateau. We're just continually climbing that mountain.
And Chief Jimenez at the Bexar County Sheriff's Office, so these shootings are happening at churches. Do we staff for that or think about that? Do we tell people it's Sunday morning? Sunday morning is not the time to sleep in. Sunday morning is yellow alert time for emergency response because we have all these soft targets and people with grievances and high weaponry. We have to take Sunday morning very seriously.
Absolutely. And this is one of the things that we do, and Ryan mentioned about the work that he has done with some churches. We actually conduct civilian response to active shooter event CRACE training through the Advanced Law Enforcement Rapid Response Training Alert of the University of Texas, of Texas State University in San Marcos. And the CRACE training, the civilian response to active shooter event, is designed to create the situational awareness to allow an unarmed citizen to not to live in fear, but to live prepared, to understand the physiology and the psychology of response to a disaster, to a violent event, and give that citizen a chance to fight, to live. Everything we do will help us survive, and we have the right to survive. And that's what we teach. We teach schools, churches, organizations, corporations, any type of organization, because this can happen anywhere. Happen in Las Vegas in an open area concert, can happen at church, can happen at school, can happen at the mall. Every time you look around, you could be sitting having dinner, and something like this could happen for a variety of reasons. And what is important is that we have a mental script. We teach this in the class. Have the mental script. Have practice that mental script. Have a plan. Practice that plan mentally in the event that something happens anywhere you are. Now, once again, it's not to live in fear. It's to live prepared.
Okay, so talking about preparation, let's bring in Dr. David Miramontes. He is an expert in this area as well. Dr. Miramontes, welcome back to The Source. And I know you want to talk about people preparing with gaining life-saving skills, correct?
Exactly. What we can do is we can make this, allow our everyday citizens to make a huge impact in these types of disasters by learning Stop the Bleed. You can go to www.stopthebleedtexas, that's Stop the Bleed, TX/STRAC, and you can find out where classes are available, or if you call the South Texas Regional Advisory Council, we can come to you if you have a big church or a business. And what we're going to do is we're going to teach you some very simple steps that can save lives. Put pressure on a wound. Pack something in the wound, use a tourniquet. Simple things that common citizens can do in the event of a tragedy like this that are going to save lives before EMS ever arrives. They're going to be able to take care of a large number of these injuries from penetrating wounds. So there's no reason why anyone, any citizen, can't learn how to do these basic medical skills that can make a huge difference on tragedies like we have experienced this week.
So, Dr. Miramontes, what's the goal on that with Stop the Bleed? How much of a penetration of that information do you want to get into the general public?
So what we're looking to do is trying to get as many people as we possibly can get trained, just like first aid or CPR. This was an initiative that was started by the White House and is sponsored by the American College of Surgeons and locally here at the South Texas Regional Advisory Council. University Hospital and many other venues are providing this training free of charge. We also have ability of buying materials, first aid materials, for a very inexpensive cost that is available online, tourniquets, packing materials, first aid kits.
Do you think that every business should have a Stop the Bleed kit ready to go?
Every business should have first aid supplies, and especially those that have higher risk should have Stop the Bleed kits.
But you know, we have like a bottle of ibuprofen and some Band-Aids and stuff like that. But you would think a Stop the Bleed kit would have really serious gauze or something that would, you know, I know there's medical super glue that you use to close wounds with, things like that.
So the Stop the Bleed kit has three basic components. First of all, it's normal everyday gauze. Second of all, it can have hemostatic gauze. That's a special kind of gauze that promotes clotting. And the third part of a kit is a tourniquet. Any injuries that are sustained, that are bleeding profusely in extremity, we can stop the blood loss by using a tourniquet. And everyday citizens can learn these skills very quickly with these kits can be utilized wherever they are stationed, commonly next to an AED or in high-risk areas such as churches, movie theaters, and businesses with a large number of employees.
All right, Dr. Miramontes, thank you for the call. Let me go to Ryan Searles. You're the trainer for active shooter situations. If you find yourself in a situation like in the church in Sutherland Springs, what do you do?
There's different options. It's very situational. I believe the chief mentioned it, you know, the class craze. It's based off the principles of really making you think and stimulating thought where you go into places. Where are my exits? Where are my secondary exits? You know, we teach avoid, deny, defend, up at alert. And that's really what you need to do. You know, how can I avoid the situation? Firstly, can I get out of there? Can I safely get out of there? And if I can't, how do I deny access to myself? Do I get in a room? Is it an inward opening door? Can I barricade it? Can I lock it? Can I shut off the lights? And really make yourself hard to get to. And then if you can't do that, I need to defend myself. And the last place we want to be is in the deep, far corner. So if someone gets in, they have all that space and we can't get to them. We need to be right up on the doors and position ourselves properly so we can defend ourselves if we need to.
If you're planning an event, then you need to make sure that lanes are clear, aisles are clear, and that people can get to exits if they need to.
Yes. Yes, I mean, exits need to be clearly marked. And when you go in somewhere, you need to just take the time to look around and see where your exits are. I mean, I teach my daughter that if we go out to eat, you know, where are the exits? Look around, find them. And that's not just because of an active shooter. One of the best things you can do in any emergency situation is know where your exits are and know how to get out of somewhere.
And would that have made a difference in you know, at the First Baptist Church?
You know, I'm not sure. I don't know the church's layout. I don't know where the exits were. I saw the entry point, but I don't know what kind of use of cover and concealment they had within the church and what they had readily available to them.
And but there are people who were still wounded, and they were still alive. They're on the ground. The shooter is walking around. He's got his and he's shooting people. And are there tactics to stay alive?
Just fight. The fight's not over until it's over.
So you're
just
saying
keep going.
Fight. Don't be passive.
No, if you're in that situation, you know, myself, that's a personal choice by someone. But myself, no, I'm not just gonna sit there. I mean, if I can fight or get that person at least struggled a little bit and get the weapon away from them, fight with them a little bit, then other people may join in. It's called the herd mentality. It takes one person to act for the rest to follow.
Okay. And Chief Jimenez, what do you think?
No, Ryan is specifically on spot. We teach part of the CRACE training is avoid, deny, defend. Back some years back, you may have heard from the Department of Homeland Security, run, hide, and fight. We changed the nomenclature a little bit because when you tell people to hide, we have training scars. We tend to hide under the table or under something, a desk, because for many years we taught in schools tornado drills, so we taught about earthquakes, or we talked about back when I was growing up in the Cold War that we need to do those nuclear attack drills. Unfortunately, when you tell people to hide, they think that's what it means. But like Ryan was saying, we changed that to deny access of the person to us. And if you cannot avoid, which is leaving, or deny access to the area, barricade, close the door, the defend, the fight is very important. If you don't do nothing, if you don't do anything, you're dead. And if I'm unarmed,
right,
and it's happening, you're going to jump in.
So do you think businesses should have active shooter drills just as frequently as they have fire drills?
Absolutely. We encourage companies. The training is free. We have a group of individuals ready to go to your company, provide the training, do a walkthrough, identify some weak areas, some areas for improvement, how to mitigate, and understanding that if you have a gun and you're concealed handgun license, yeah, we teach you the same thing, avoid, deny, and defend. And if you're not armed, you can steal. We teach you how to look around your premises, your area, your restaurant, and identify possible weapons. Will I get shot? Probably. But if I can get the person and try to control it and overtake the shooter, others can jump in and we can save more lives.
Okay.
And that's what is important.
We're going to take a break. We'll come back. We've got a lot of callers here queued up, ready to go. The number to call in is 210-614-8980. If you want to join the conversation as we talk about mass shooting emergency preparedness, how do you feel that we have to have this kind of conversation? You have to wonder, you know, can we even really call ourselves a civilized society anymore when we have to worry about being shot in our own workplace and churches? The number to call in is 210-614-8980. The source continues. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. We're talking about mass shooting emergency preparedness and response from our local governments and from you, the individual. How are you going to deal with it when it comes to your doorstep, comes to your workplace, comes to your place of worship? The number to call in is 210-614-8980. And Jacob has called in. And Jacob, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. My question was sort of answered in some of the previous conversation that you folks were having. But my question is this. I'm curious about what is the prevailing thought among the experts, among the people that deal with these sort of situations and are trained for these situations. What is their thoughts in regards to the armed citizen factor? And specifically, what do they think about the comments that were made by our Texas Attorney General and by the President of the United States that it was an armed citizen that actually sort of, you know, prevented further damage, and he was able to return fire, and it was actually a good thing that there were other armed citizens there. Does that complicate their job? Does it make the situation worse? I mean, do other statistics that show that it's a good thing or a bad thing?
Okay. We'll get multiple responses here because I think there might be different takes on this. But let's go first to Mark Chadwick for the Bexar County Office of Emergency Management. Is it helpful to have everyone pull out a sidearm and open fire, or how would you like to see this go down?
You know, this is a really difficult question. It's not one that's easy for anybody to answer. I think that in this situation, we saw that there was an armed citizen that was able to take action. Could this individual have gone on to kill more people? I think the answer is yes. Do we want everyone in the world to just be able to pull out a gun? I think that is not what we want. We don't want to open up the Wild West. However, for those who are trained appropriately, the people who've passed the background checks, you know, there could be off-duty officers that, you know, would fit into the category we're talking about. Those situations, those people can be assistants. But I don't think that anybody would want to see the Wild West open up where you come around a corner and you're patrol vehicle, and all of a sudden everybody is armed, and you don't know who the bad guy is from the good guys.
Okay, and so Ryan Searles, you are a trainer, independent trainer for active shooting situations. What do you think?
You know, it's the same thing we teach law enforcement. I also train law enforcement, and responding in plain clothes as well can be very, very difficult in one of these situations. As a normal citizen with your, let's say, your concealed handgun license, the time to deploy that weapon would be once you're in a room and you've denied access to yourself. That can be your defend option. You know, you should not be out actively hunting down the suspect in a building. One, it's very dangerous for you because law enforcement can come in and just see someone with a weapon and you could get engaged by law enforcement. The other thing is, you know, under stress, just going out to the range every once in a while and shooting, that's not enough for being able to respond with a weapon under stress. So your body's naturally going through things like auditory exclusion, tunnel vision, time dilation.
Your muscles don't act the same.
No. And you know, you lose your fine motor skills at about 90 beats per minute.
This incredible tunnel vision. You lose so much going around you peripherally. You're not really in a position to be with a live weapon.
You're not. And unless you train under stress, train all the time, you're always out at the range, your hit percentage is maybe going to be 10% of your rounds you're hitting. So the safer, better option for all that is if you're a CHL holder and you can deny access to yourself, your weapon is now your defend option. Don't actively go hunting for the suspect.
So the hero shooter in this situation was a trained marksman. And he was also, he trained other people. He was the ideal person to be at that situation at that time.
Yeah, and it's a little
unfortunately, if he was late, and, you know, I'm sorry, you know, but it was after so many people had been killed.
Yes, and it was also a little different. It was external from the situation. He was outside. You know, there wasn't a bunch of people running around in between them. So it's just scenario-based, but no, from the normal scenario, inside a building, there's an active shooter, people running around. If you're a CHL holder, you should not be hunting down the suspect. You should be avoiding. If you can't avoid, then your weapon is used as your defend option once you've denied access to yourself.
Okay, so it sounds like the hero shooter in this situation is not where people are talking about everyone should have a gun. We had a trained individual with a rifle responding to this, and so that may be interesting to as people debate the future of gun safety in America. Here's another caller. This is Diana. And Diana, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was just wondering how effective is playing dead, and how, when do I know when I should play dead and when I should run? That's it. Thank you.
All right, Diana, thank you for the call. I can hear this stress in your voice, and I know that, I mean, you don't want to be thinking about these things. You know, you really, this is more stress than we actually need in our daily life. But unfortunately, here we are today, and I'm sorry about that. But Ryan Searles, plain dead.
You know, that's what a lot of the kids did at Virginia Tech. Law enforcement described the scene as eerie when they made entry into that building because everybody was playing dead in the Norris Hall. And, you know, in the one room where Christina Anderson, who speaks a lot about active shooter, and she's a survivor of Virginia Tech, the classroom she was in, 100% of every student in that room was shot. And they were mostly playing dead. So, you know, again, that's a very personal, situational thing. If that's...
So there's no recipe.
There's no recipe. If that's what you want to do, I advise against it. I'm more of the fact that I'm not going to lay there and just let someone shoot me. I'm going to defend myself.
Okay, but if you're not, you know, you're obviously a fit individual full of testosterone, you can defend yourself. Other people, maybe not.
Still, it's more not so much, you know, at that point, it's a mentality. I'm going to fight through this. I'm going
to
make it.
Okay, let me go to Chief Jimenez for your reaction. Play dead?
No. We actually teach against it. I'm actually friends with Christina Anderson. I'm currently at the Alert National Conference, after shooting incident National Conference in San Marcos. And we were just having this conversation last night. Yes, she played dead. We don't recommend it. Like Ryan was saying, when we teach these classes to civilians, unarmed civilians, if you have a mindset of survival and you follow the avoid, deny, and defend, if you're trying to avoid, even if you're getting shot, you're going to continue trying to avoid. You're going to run, you're going to get out. And if you're defending the area, barricade, close the door, laying down, doing nothing, she got hit. She was shot 3 times. The first time that the shooter came into the room 211, and 2 more times that he re-entered the room. No need for that. So we actually teach against it. We go back to the basics. Get out of the area. You cannot get out of the area. Block yourself in a room that you can defend. Barricade, close the door, lights out. And if nothing else, and you need to defend yourself, then we're going to fight. And we're going to fight to that. Because it's not really about you now. You may be stopping more people from getting hurt or getting killed.
All right, another caller, Alden. Alden, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, yes. Thank you so much for taking my call. First of all, thank you so much to all of the first responders. Thank you so much for the person who took out the active shooter in Texas. If it wasn't for them, yes, we would have suffered probably more casualties. I kind of wanted to touch a little bit on what we can do before these events happen. I feel that, you know, as an American, we need to work on more of our societal culture, on who we are as America now. I feel that, you know, there's a lot of people that love assault rifles, you know, for the rush of being able to take these out on the firing range and utilize these weapons. But, you know, we really need to think, if we keep having these assault rifles out in society, you know, there's going to always be that chance where we have this one lunatic out there
that
gets his hands on these guns.
Alden, thank you for the call. That brings up the wider issue of gun safety in America. When we use the term assault rifles, and some people don't like us using that term, they say this was your standard semi-automatic rifle. It's a tactical weapon. They don't like assault rifle. But that's a term of art that people use. So I don't want to get into that that debate about semantics. But first, let's go to Mark Chadwick about trying to prevent these types of events. How do we do that?
Well, I think it starts with some of the things we've already been talking about. Ryan was pointing out earlier. You have to know your environment. Everywhere we go, and it's not just for active shooter, it's for everything. We always encourage and teach people that we want them to do. It's when you go to work, when you go to play, when you're out with your family, wherever you go, know your surroundings. You know, pay attention to what's going on in your surroundings. Sometimes we put blinders on, and we put ourselves right in the middle of situations that we didn't even pay attention to. They were there. So it's that mentality of these things can happen here. What we always hate hearing after an incident is when somebody comes up and says, these things never happen. Well, that's part of the problem. We need to change our mentality. These things can happen anywhere, at any time, any day. And so it's that mentality change. It's a preparedness mentality. And like Ryan has been stressing, it's that mentality of, I'm going to be a survivor. So, you know, can you be prepared for every situation? No. But we can, in our own mind, already be setting the pace and the tone that sure. myself, my family, the people I'm with, we're going to be safe because
okay.
I'm going to yeah.
So Mark Chadwick, we're going to take a break, but I want to come back. So the real question is, how do we identify warning signs, red flags, trying to, before a guy gets there with the gun, figure out that this person should be monitored and we can avoid a situation like this? The Source continues after the break. We'll pick up there. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. We're going to pick up where we left off with the previous caller asking about how do we prevent these events before the shooter arrives. Is there a way to do that, or is that capable? Do we have so many apparatus in our society these days, self-surveillance on social media? Is that something that can be tapped into? Ryan Searles, you do the active shooting training.
You know, there's always what we call OSINT, open source intelligence gathering. You can look at social media, you can look at other things, but I do not think there's a 100% sure way of being able to point out someone ahead of time and be like, they're going to be an active shooter. I think a lot of that comes with if we see signals, we have to act on signals. We have to notify people. We have to get law enforcement involved. We have to let people know, you know, this person's acting a little different. Something might be going on with them. Or if they are posting very radicalized things or very hateful messages and threatening and stuff like that, we have to notify law enforcement. We have to act on those messages. But again, it really comes back to, if we can't catch 100% of everybody in that net, then where does it really start? And it starts with the preparation and just being situationally aware of where we're at and being able to respond.
Okay, another caller, Dorothy. Hi, Dorothy. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, yes. I have a question, really, for Mr. Searles and Chief Jimenez. I was just thinking, you know, it's really hard to anticipate when somebody might do this sort of thing. And in the meantime, I believe, unfortunately, people have to become just more proactive. And places where people congregate regularly, like churches, maybe perhaps have two or three volunteers, people who are trained by somebody like Mr. Searles in conjunction with local law enforcement, have like an emergency plan with the whole congregation on what to do if something like that happens, and have several people who normally go to the church, you know, with strategically placed, so we don't want anybody caught in the crossfire. But, you know, what do you think about that? In case that does happen, and then we at least have people prepared and not just a bunch of sitting ducks.
All right, Dorothy, thank you for the call. And that sounds like what you've been talking about, Ryan Searles. I mean, does every church need to have their own militia?
I don't think a militia, but, you know, security never hurts. But as long as that congregation, I mean, that's up to that congregation if they want to do that. However, as long as they understand training isn't a one-time thing out at the range and then you're qualified, you're good, you can respond. No, training's an ongoing thing. You've heard all of us talk about it. You constantly have to be training, and there's never enough training, especially if you're trusting these individuals to respond to a highly stressful event like this. That's a lot of training, and it's a very specific mindset as well.
Okay, here's another caller. This is Tony. Tony, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. So I'm listening to all these instructions on preparation for getting ready and what to do in case there's a shooter. And I'm a mother of two young children right now, and they're doing active shooter drills in the schools and preparing for lockdowns and stuff. And it's horrifying. And it's horrifying that we can't go straight to the source and change things. And we have to take classes and get a license to own and operate a vehicle, but there's nothing like that for guns here in Texas.
All right, Tony, thank you for the call. So she is talking about the easy availability of guns that we have here in the United States. That's the way things are. That's what our lawmakers have decided, and that's what voters have endorsed with our lawmakers. But Mark Chadwick over at the Bexar County Office of Emergency Management, does it alarm you that these guns are so easily available for people who even have a history of mental illness and may have anger issues?
Well, it alarms me that there are some people who have weapons. However, you know, we do have a constitutional right, and I don't want to infringe upon that.
But it's not an absolute right.
Exactly. As we're finding in this situation, there are still some holes out there that need to be plugged on people that should have been flagged. And I think we're seeing some action already being taken by our legislators on that to make sure that the reporting in some areas goes into those databases to make sure that we can verify people correctly. However, you know, what we always overlook is the fact that the criminal element, if a criminal wants a weapon, they typically don't go to academy or Bass Pro Shop or any other place like that and buy a weapon. Typically, criminals will purchase from other people who have stolen weapons, or they'll steal weapons. So this is one of those areas where we could debate all day.
And people do. People do, and they get nowhere. But right. Yeah, I hear your point, and there's, you know, well, we're here to talk about preparedness. We're here to talk about dealing with the world as it is today. So Mark Chadwick over at the Bexar County Emergency Management Office, what more do you need that you don't have now to get ready for the next shooting? What was there anything that you were lacking on Sunday that you wish you had had?
I wish I had a crystal ball. And I know that sounds funny, but I wish that we could see into the future and see some of these things so we could prevent them from happening. As far as for the resources here in Bexar County, we are very fortunate in that our county leadership is very proactive in making sure that we have the resources we need. And in the generosity they have allowed us to be able to freely respond to our neighbors. You know, Sutherland Springs is one county away. They're 30 miles, 30 minutes away. These are our family and friends. So having that freedom to be able to quickly respond is extremely helpful. I can't think of anything that we were without, and partially that's because of our partnership, the way that we work things. Is I don't have to have all the resources that are needed to respond, but with all those partnerships that we make and work on year long, together we can meet these challenges.
And Chief Jimenez, what did you make of the response? What would you have liked to have seen sharpened a little bit?
Response, like I mentioned at the beginning of the program, initial response was amazing. The emergency crews, fire, EMS, police, responded very fast, put hands on people. We'll never know how many lives were saved just because of the quick response of the fire and EMS responded. I know one of the callers mentioned the frustration. We can hear the frustration in her voice. Understand that all of us, fire, EMS, especially law enforcement, we have to get this right 100% of the time. And the bad guys, they only need to get it right once. So that's why we want education. That's why we provide this training, because we cannot be everywhere all the time. But if our communities, our citizens, our brothers and sisters take this training and they take the opportunity to learn how to defend themselves, how to prepare for this event, and have that commitment of survival, more lives can be saved.
Right.
We're not going to be able to prevent it.
And Mark Chadwick, we overlooked the fact that BAMSI, our military medicine, has played a role in helping save lives. Do you work closely with them?
Most definitely. Most of that is coordinated through STRAC, the South Texas Regional Advisory Council, and the Regional Medical Operations Center. You know, they're one of the level one hospitals that we have right here in our area. One of two. We have that one on University. So especially when you're talking about, in this case, where you have mass casualty and mass fatality, there's not any single hospital that can handle it on their own. And while there's some good hospitals out there that are smaller, that don't have that quite that level, they wouldn't be the ones you'd want to send these trauma victims to. We need the very best care for these individuals as fast as possible.
How do y'all decide on the fly when you're at the scene and suddenly, you know, we got to get people to emergency care right away? Do y'all do a level of triage that this person would be better off at BAMC, this person would be better off at University, this part would go to a memorial? How do y'all do that?
That's done through the Regional Medical Operations Center, which is under the control of the South Texas Regional Advisory Council. So what they have is they have the complete listing, and we can bring it up on what's called WebEOC. And we can look at all the hospitals right now. We can look at their level of operation, their number of beds available. We can see.
So y'all have deep data at your fingertips that you can call up and make sure to help save lives when seconds count.
Exactly.
That's incredible. And Mark Searles, do you think that a shooter is looking for soft targets, and that if you present yourself as a hard target, that they'll look for someplace else to go?
Yeah, I mean, these shooters, they're not looking for a gun battle. I said earlier, if they are, you know, they try it at a police station, but they're not. They're looking for the path of least resistance. Many times that's when you see they're given resistance. A lot of times they end up killing themselves or giving up.
So this Kelly guy, if he had thought that going to this church on that Sunday wouldn't have gone down as easy, it would have been tougher, he probably would have gone, because he was after a specific target, he would have gone elsewhere.
Yeah, it may have been put off. You know, I don't want to what if that, but it could have been put off. I mean, you look, once that neighbor engaged him, he sure dropped his weapon and ran away. So a lot of times they're looking for the path of least resistance. So the more training, physical security barriers you can put up and things like that, it could start mitigating some of that risk.
All right. We've been talking about the emergency response to the shooting in Sutherland Springs at the First Baptist Church there. We'll continue to report on the latest as we learn more information about what happened and the investigation into that. I hope we never have to have this conversation again, but we have to be ready for it, just as our emergency personnel had to prepare for the next emergency. And I want to thank all of you for joining us, and thank you for tuning in. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies.